Blog Talk Radio.
Obsolete rifle, if I could call it that. And was there a third?
The Major Carcano was not an obsolete rifle. It was a rifle that was no longer used by the Italian army.
Mm-hmm.
It was for years a good solid workhorse rifle. and there was nothing. You know, they say it's a poor workman who blames his tools. The Mannlicher Carcano was, was a good workhorse rifle for the Italian infantry.
Mm-hmm.
And and in fact, Lee Harvey Oswald was not that bad a shot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was trained in the Marine Corps to be a fairly decent shot, and by Marine standards, he was slightly above average.
Mm. Now, the controversy, there's still a lot of controversy, and I mentioned that there was an Australian retired detective expert who came over here, went to Dealey Plaza, went up to the book depository, and talked to a former, a writer who had researched with a guy who's now dead, an FBI, I think, firearms expert who had some doubts about who really shot Kennedy. And according to this thing that was on cable TV, it was Kennedy was hit by the first bullet from Oswald, but the bullet that smashed his skull was an accident that it's allegedly a Secret Service guard in back had taken the safety off of his rifle, and it discharged and hit Kennedy and smashed his brain. That was the proposition on this TV cable, supposedly another expose on this controversial assassination. But you said,
I find it rather interesting,
mm-hmm,
that this has only come out
mm-hmm
in the past 6 months or so.
Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with any of this?
I've heard that story before,
okay,
but
okay.
I also know that the bullets that were found on the scene
mm-hmm
were examined in an exhaustive fashion, and there is no evidence that they came from anything but the same gun.
No, this is what he said. I saw they repeated this several times on cable TV, the real REEL. I don't know if you've got it back there. And he said that there was a different bullet which would not have fitted in the chamber of that rifle, and that was used either to cleanse the chamber or whatever. And then the bullet that hit Kennedy and Connally was the one that came from Oswald, and that the bullet that smashed Kennedy's skull was a different size.
Well, I think,
I mean, that's what they said.
I know. I think there's no limit to the amount of imagination that helps sell books. And there's no limit. There's no limit to the appetite people have for conspiracies.
Mm-hmm.
And this is nothing new.
Mm-hmm.
After Lincoln's assassination, among
mm-hmm
the people that were being blamed for complicity in the assassination
mm-hmm
were Pope Pius IX,
mm-hmm
who was, according to some people, a secret Confederate sympathizer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you believe that, I've got a bridge at Belmont and the river that I'll be glad to sell you real cheap.
I don't want to have cement shoes and end up in the Chicago River.
You get the idea.
Oh, right, right, right.
In the case of Leon Czolgosz,
mm-hmm,
there was the belief
mm-hmm
that anarchists, including anarchists in Chicago,
mm-hmm,
led by Emma Goldman,
mm-hmm,
were behind the assassination.
Mm-hmm.
Again,
mm-hmm,
it is true that Leon Czolgosz wanted desperately to be accepted by the anarchists. That doesn't mean that the anarchists were in league with him. In fact, in an anarchist newspaper, The Alarm,
mm-hmm,
they carried a notice to beware of this man who had been appearing at anarchist gatherings trying to solicit support for assassinating public officials.
Good Lord, it seems like...
The anarchists themselves thought that he was some kind of a plant.
Mm-hmm.
Czolgosz was not a plant, but mm-hmm Czolgosz was a nut that even the anarchists wanted no part of.
Mm. Now, what was the other thing I was going to say? Now, there's a lot of have you seen the Zapruder film?
Yes, I have.
And what's your opinion? Because the controversy now is that several frames when the original was turned over to the Warren Commission, several frames were either missing or distorted. You know, there's so much controversy. It seems that the most controversial assassinations in our history are Lincoln's and Kennedy's. And, of course, the way they handled the trial of the alleged conspirators after the Lincoln assassination seems to me a gross miscarriage of justice, especially Mary Surratt hanging a woman.
Well, Mary Surratt, there's no question that Mary Surratt was guilty of espionage.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question that Mary Surratt was a Confederate sympathizer. There is very little evidence to suggest that she had any guilty knowledge of a plan to kill Lincoln. She was aware of a plot and may have been part of a plot to kidnap Lincoln. But Mary Surratt was, I mean, look, they were looking for scapegoats at that time. They wanted to round up as many quote-unquote conspirators as possible and make an example of them. This was the first time a president had been assassinated in American history. It came at the end of a very divisive war. They were looking for guilty people. Remember, for a time, Jefferson Davis was considered to be one of the ringleaders.
Mm-hmm. Well, he spent some time in prison, too.
Well, he was put in. He was imprisoned, not for that. Jefferson Davis was imprisoned for being a leader of the rebellion.
Right, right.
Which, incidentally, that may have been illegal, because I believe there was an amnesty granted to anybody who signed the Oath of Allegiance.
Yeah, I guess he didn't. Now, jumping forward, since you're in Washington now, let's get back to Lincoln and the first attempted assassination. Can you tell us something about that?
Yes. Yes, in 1864, on his way to the old soldiers' home, where Lincoln would spend many summer evenings away from the White House. Lincoln
and away from Mary Todd?
Well, that's another possibility, isn't it? The president would go out to this rather secluded area outside Washington. It was Lincoln's equivalent of Camp Davis, Camp David. He was unescorted at that time. Presidents often traveled unaccompanied. And at one point when he was on his way to the old soldier's home, someone fired a bullet through his stovepipe hat. He arrived at the old soldier's home. One of the soldiers there spotted a bullet hole in his hat, and he ordered the soldier to say nothing about it to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
It was only after his death that the information about this assassination attempt, the information on this assassination attempt came out.
Mm-hmm.
But, incidentally, today is the anniversary of the Gettysburg Address.
Oh, yeah, they brought it up, and, of course, that's there's something to be said for short, succinct speeches.
Well, brevity is the soul of wit.
Yeah, you're right.
Winston Churchill's directive on becoming First Lord of the Admiralty, when he sent out directives to all of his senior naval officers, and it began, please state this day on one side of paper the readiness of your units to engage in full-scale combat. letter.
Brilliant. Right. Now, jumping forward to Harry Truman, since you're in Washington, do you have any background on the attempt, the Puerto Rican nationalist attempt to assassinate Truman?
Oscar Collazo,
right.
And Tarasola, and that group.
Mm-hmm.
There were two parts to that.
Mm-hmm.
There was, of course, the attempt to shoot Truman, who was then staying at the Blair House while the White House was being renovated. And then there was the woman who, with several conspirators, went into the gallery of the House of Representatives and was handed a gun by one of her conspirators, and she and at least two other men started firing into the congressman. One was killed, several others were wounded. In the case of the attempt to kill Truman, three policemen were killed.
Mm-hmm. Now, nobody... go ahead.
They never got anywhere near Truman.
Right. No, no, none of those guys were executed, were they? I think one was recently pardoned by Clinton, I think.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, none of them were executed, and they were really rather lucky because they could have been.
Mm, oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, it's 50 years is a long time. Oh, Patrick,
this
I came...
more than 50 years. This was...
51?
They were... the assassination attempt on Truman took place in 1951.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is...
oh, that'd be 60...
You know, what, 60 years?
Yeah, 62 years. Now, I came across some very interesting thing because I'm going to do something on assassinations in American politics.
Now, we're talking about assassination since a lot of emphasis has been on the 50th anniversary of the assassination of President John Kennedy. Today is on the 27th in 1957. Daughter Caroline was born, and she was appointed by Obama to be the ambassador to Japan. She arrived in Japan, I think, last week. She did not come back for the 50th anniversary of her father's death and celebrations or the memorials today on that date, November 22nd. Among the people, world leaders who showed up at the funeral of John Kennedy was President Charles de Gaulle, who's also his birthday, at the end of November. Of course, he was also, there was several assassination attempts on President Charles de Gaulle. None of them, thank God, were successful. I think it's, we're going to play two clips from Charles de Gaulle's life. One was when he thanked America for saving Europe and Asia, and the other one was the announcement of his death. First, de Gaulle thanks America for saving Europe and Asia.
I want to thank again the American people for the magnificent effort which, under the leadership of your two great presidents, Roosevelt and Truman, have made possible the victory. Without you, Americans, there would have been no future for Europe and Asia, but a terrible servitude. There would have been neither freedom nor justice for the world. Long live the United States of America.
Now, de Gaulle died, he retired from the presidency of France, or he quit in May of 1968 after the riots in Paris. He said he had enough. He saved France twice, and he wasn't going to do it a third time, and he felt it was time to go. And he had a quiet funeral in Colombey, and this is the news report at that time.
George Pompidou told his nation in a televised speech, General de Gaulle is dead. France is a widow. The president said that in 1940, de Gaulle saved our honor. In 1944, he led us to liberation and to victory. In 1958, he saved us from civil war. He gave France her institution, her place in the world. Pompidou concluded, in the national soul, de Gaulle will live forever.
Most of the rest of the world and most Frenchmen have never heard of Charles de Gaulle in 1940 when Hitler's war machine knifed into France. But Colonel de Gaulle's tanks had stopped the German column. And in government circles, he was known as an original and unorthodox military theorist. He was provisionally appointed Brigadier General and Assistant Secretary of War in time to watch France surrender. De Gaulle did not surrender. He flew to London, said it was his duty to assume the burdens of France. In broadcasts over the BBC, he appealed to his countrymen to carry on the fight. At first, Frenchmen were more mystified than inspired. But during an Allied strategy meeting in Casablanca, where de Gaulle reluctantly shook hands with a rival, General Henri Giraud, his influence began to be felt. Cross of Lorraine and Charles de Gaulle were the symbols of the free French underground that fought against the German occupiers. When the Allies invaded Normandy in 1944, de Gaulle was ready. He entered a liberated Paris in August 1944, and after vicious infighting among rival factions, he emerged as leader of France's provisional government. But de Gaulle found himself handcuffed by a divided government and by party political maneuvers that aroused his contempt. In January 1946, he packed his bags and retired to his country home in Colombey to await the call he was sure would come again. It took a long time. 12 years later, after a military disaster in Indochina, and when a revolt of French settlers and military men in Algeria threatened the government, de Gaulle was called in. In May 1958, President René Coty appointed him premier and gave him 6 months of virtual dictatorial power. Following two more Algerian revolts, including a bloody one by army officers in 1961 and an assassination attempt, independence for Algeria was overwhelmingly approved by referendum. Under de Gaulle, the strength of the French army continued to grow. Its weapons became more sophisticated, and de Gaulle's love for the independence of France burned brightly. The new glory of France reached its climax in the detonation of the country's first atomic bomb. Because of de Gaulle's attempted manipulation of the European common market, and because he ordered Allied troops out of France, he was thoroughly unloved by the other members of NATO. In 1968, de Gaulle's solidarity at home began to crumble. Leftist students rioted, and the general strike almost brought the country to a standstill. The aim was to topple de Gaulle, but he fought back and won a victory in parliamentary elections. Of the then Premier, Georges Pompidou, things would never be the same again.
And they haven't been in France. We're hearing a lot about the so-called American Indian movement, called AIM. It's not the same as Accuracy in Media. And the leaders, so-called leaders of AIM, American Indian Movement, have launched a campaign, so we hear, to get the names of Indians who that are used for things like squaw bread, for the names of athletic teams like the Apaches, the Redskins. They want to get these names abolished from these entities. I'm going to play the interview that I did with then-Governor Charles Lamb, governor of Colorado at the time. I did this interview at the 1984 Democratic Convention, and it's part of the white Caucasian views of Indians and the environment. I think this is one of the problems that both groups don't really understand one another, and until we begin to realize that we are a mosaic, that everybody has contributed to this great country, that we need to try to understand one another. And just because you use the name Apache for a high school football team, or squaw bread, which I believe was invented had a connection to the Indians, and it's not a denigration of squaw, which is an Algonquin name the woman. But here's that interview with Governor Richard Lamb.
Hello, my friends. This is Peter Paul for Animals and the Idea of the Environment. I'm speaking to a very distinguished guest. I missed him at the Democratic Convention, Governor Richard Lamb of Colorado. Welcome to San Francisco, Governor.
Thank you, Peter.
Governor, what is there unique about Colorado? Environmentally speaking, I'm sorry.
I think that actually Colorado has always been a sort of like it's the mountains, the quality of life in Colorado has always attracted people. And one time a lot of it was a tubercular treatment place. And I think now that starting after the Second World War, when a lot of people saw the skiing, the outdoor life, there's just mountain climbers. I think there's an awful lot of people that find their way to Colorado for the uniqueness of our environment.
Since we're talking about Colorado and mountains, do you think that the electorate want a man on horseback?
I think that there is something to that. And let me say that I think that that's not the thing that our country ought to look for, but I do think that, you know, people in this day and age are looking for simple solutions to complex problems, and they're looking for politicians that are going to sort of pat them on the head and say, everything's all right, leave it to me, and I'm on horseback.
So the electorate shouldn't act like sheep.
Well, I think that's right. Yes, I think that that basically that this country, I think instead of a Ronald Reagan, it needs a Winston Churchill. I mean, or by the way, a Walter Mondale or a Ronald Reagan. In other words, I'm saying that neither political party is really coming to grips with our problems, and what we really need is somebody to stop patronizing and condescending us and telling us that everything's okay. We're going to grow our way out of these deficits.
You mean tell us not what we want to hear, but should hear?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that a democracy that doesn't come to grips with the realities of its time is not going to remain a democracy.
Governor, you have a lot of Native Americans in Colorado. One of them said to me, the Anglo looks at the mountain and he sees a ski lodge. We look at the mountain and we see the symmetry, the color, the majesty, the gods. Can you explain the discrepancy?
Yeah, I think that's a very perceptive question, Peter. I mean, I personally believe that our Anglo getting and spending society has got an awful lot to learn from the Indians. And I think that we cannot have this. We can't continue on the way we've going, ripping up the land and not treating the earth, as the Indians say, or the Native Americans say, our mother, and in the way where we have been. And I think there is a terrific discrepancy. Whereas there's this ownership domination in the Anglo culture that simply says that we have to possess and dominate and change it. Where I think that. That's worked okay for the last 100 years, but I think the time is fast approaching when we have to better come to grips, as the Indians did, with the environment that surrounds them.
Governor, you're in California. We have a bad rep in the West. You got any words for Californians?
Oh, I think it's a great state too, but I think that you like your previous question, and California and Colorado's following the same way, is that probably didn't pay enough attention to the quality of their environment. The people out here are trustees of one of the most beautiful states in the Union, and I just hope that they're able to preserve the quality of life that's left.
We've been speaking to Governor Richard Lamb of the great state of Colorado. All the best in your political career, Governor, and may you offer your political wisdom, and it's accepted by the electorate, not only in Colorado, but perhaps on a national level someday.
Peter, thank you, and thank you for your good spirit and your good humor. Thanks. Good questions, too.
Thank you, Governor.
Thank you. Well, we'll end with politics and poker, and maybe politicians should play more poker. Let's see who's got a winning hand.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Okay, Tony, what are you
going
to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too.
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen,
How about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of jacks, bat out.
Politics and poker, politics and poker, shuffle up the cards and find the joker. He's a game for children, he's a game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, not to bet,
when to call a bluff.
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paratrays.
Bet 'em.
Little trays, good as gold.
I'll say. Raise your five.
I'll call.
I'll hold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in.
Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Panyashinkovich.
I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out. I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Well, we brought this up about Pawlenty, that people can't pronounce his name or spell it. Actually, I think he's a former baptized Roman Catholic and his Polish ethnicity. But anyway, we'll be talking about who may be the Republican presidential candidate in 2016, and it won't be Chris Christie, the William Howard Taft II, as some people have described his girth. So have a safe Thanksgiving. Don't drink, or if you drink, don't drink heavily, and then drive. This is Peter Paul Bozzola. We will be back Friday, and we're going to be updating a bunch of things, and we'll have the rest of the interview with author Patrick Butler on Presidents and Assassins. With Peter Paul Bozzola, have a happy Thanksgiving and good night.